Welcome to Made in Science, the official podcast of the University of Stuttgart. My name is Wolfgang Holtkamp. Today, Professor Sibylle Baumbach is our guest. She has been chairing the Department of English Literatures and Culture at the Institute of Literary Studies since October 2018. And in April 2023, she became also president of the prestigious German Shakespeare Society, which is one of the oldest literary societies in Germany and the world. Plus, at our university, she's also head of IRIS, the Interchange Forum for Reflecting on Intelligent System. Welcome, Professor Baumbach, to our podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm very well. Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
When I summarized some of your functions at the university and beyond, Our listeners may have the idea that interdisciplinarity is one of your middle names. I don't know if you have a middle name at all, but it certainly looks like it very, very much. You are fascinated by a number of things, and it seems to me that you like to combine, to mediate between very different aspects in life as well. Now, one of your publications is on literature and fascination. Thus, I want to talk with you about your fascination for the works of William Shakespeare, what we can learn from your concepts of deep attention and hyperattention, and how you shape and explore the relation between the humanities and engineering at our university through a very special IRIS. Let's start with the latter, if I may. If we take it literally, the iris is primarily used to regulate the amount of light entering the eye and therefore protects against excessive glare. Now, at the university, I've seen you often as a representative of the Interchange Forum for Reflecting on Intelligent System. So if we take iris metaphorically here at the university, does it mean to protect? Does it mean to regulate, like its namesake that refers to the eye? Or is it something entirely different?
Well, thank you very much for that question. Well, the Interchange Forum for Reflecting on Intelligent Systems is not about regulation. It is really about reflection, and maybe regulation then comes second. So if you take the iris as something that is responsible or makes you see clearly, basically, and controls the amount of light that enters the eye, IRIS at the University of Stuttgart would kind of control maybe or integrate the amount of reflection that is happening in at this university. So in IRIS, we are deeply invested in reflecting on intelligent systems and their effects on society. So it focuses on research, on teaching and public engagement. And questions that are addressed are, for instance, how can we promote reflection on intelligent systems through research, through teaching? How can we avoid discrimination in AI decision making? What are intelligent systems? And you might be surprised that I am a literary scholar and I'm actually part of IRIS. But IRIS takes this notion of intelligent systems in a very broad sense. So it's not only about AI, but it's also about other intelligent systems. So systems that are adaptive, dynamic, responsive to other systems. And we also had one workshop actually that tackled the question to what extent literature and culture could be seen as intelligent systems. And literature, if you think about it, plays a huge role in reflecting about the ethical responsibilities, the ethical challenges that come with these new technologies. So it's about controlling in the sense that it is about making us reflect about what we do in our research and about the changes and impact on society that AI and other intelligent systems will have.
And here we are again, the ethical you mentioned and the technological as well. And that brings us, of course, to AI that you also just mentioned with ChatGPT. We have entered a new dimension of engaging with texts that refers not only to literature, that goes beyond, I guess, as well. Some say that this development means that new tools are needed by our students, but also by us, the lecturers, to evaluate texts, to work with texts, also to prepare in our studies the students for what their challenges will be outside of the university. Now, I wonder, is IRIS involved in that topic? I would assume it is. If it is, are there any recommendations by IRIS which tools should be implemented in study programs or any other recommendations that IRIS would have?
Yes, I mean, ChatGPT is a huge challenge. We cannot ignore it and it won't go away again. So we have to deal with it. And as you say, we need new tools and we also need a shift in skills. And IRIS has organized several events already on ChatGPT, especially a series entitled Living, Learning and Writing with ChatGPT. And there is a program within IRIS that concentrates on teaching, which is RISING, so Reflecting Intelligent Systems in Teaching. And there we're discussing how to make students aware of the potential, but also the limits of ChatGPT. So, for instance, recommendations include integrating certain exercises in teaching. For instance, let your students write short essay on a specific topic with the help of ChatGPT, and then discuss the results and discuss why also some students may have different results. And also do a fact check because ChatGPT still makes quite a few mistakes. It is learning, but especially when it comes to bibliography or sources, there's quite a lot that is actually not correct. And to make students aware of this and also make students aware of the fact that these systems are kind of tailored also to the users, that will be one challenge. Because especially in the humanities, where we still have essays and students still write essays, the temptation to use ChatGPT is huge. So we have to deal with it and maybe also reorganize the way we assess our students based on written work.
Against this background, is there already anything in particular that you yourself have found particularly successful, an approach that has worked for you and your students in dealing with these matters? You already said, why not have the students, or why not ask the students to write an essay, use Chat GPT, but also then perhaps compare to an essay written the mm-hmm. traditional way mm-hmm. And all of that. But is there anything else? And what are your experiences so far?
Well, for instance, you could also use it to discuss poetic form or to make students aware of what works and what doesn't work. For instance, I used it to teach Shakespeare and the Shakespearean sonnet. So I asked ChatGPT to write a sonnet on a certain topic, let's say Shakespeare's libraries or love, in the Shakespearean form. And then it comes up, of course, with a sonnet. And then you can present that sonnet to the students without telling them that this is a sonnet by ChatGPT and let them discuss the form, let them guess, you know, or guess the date when it was written. And then you reveal, of course, the origin. And then you can discuss kind of the scheme, to what extent, you know, ChatGPT was successful or not. And actually also, you know, just for the fun of it, I asked ChatGPT also to write a drama, a Shakespearean play. And I found out that ChatGPT is actually being very modest sometimes. So it said, oh, I can't do Shakespeare. It's too complex. So I can't possibly give you a whole drama. But here's the opening scene. I actually presented an opening scene, which also shows us and shows the students that there are certain conventions, generic conventions, which, of course, ChatGPT is also based on. So in order to teach genre, poetic genre, dramatic genre, you can use ChatGPT, the examples that it actually provides, in order to spark ideas or open up a discussion among students about these things.
Let us see what advice we can get from Shakespeare in this matter. You already mentioned him, of course. In his tragedy, Othello, the character Iago is the villain who embodies a very demonic figure. Actually, he comes on stage and tells the audience very clearly that he is only playing the good guy, but in reality, he's the bad guy. And I think the iconic sentence that he says is, "I'm not what I am." The audience must constantly check which Iago is in front of, is on stage right now. The audience must constantly rethink the character behind it. My question, what does rethinking mean for you? What needs to be rethought, also beyond university affairs, that you come across, perhaps also in the relation between the humanities and the so-called hard sciences?
Well, that's a huge question. Well, first of all, it raises huge questions. And this is why he's so popular, actually, because he is so, or his plays are so problematic and so complex. Well, with Iago, I think what interests me in terms of research is also this this idea about attention. But I think we probably might get to that because you asked a question about the humanities now. So Shakespeare makes us take on different perspectives, and Iago is a wonderful example because he comes on stage first before Othello even shows up, and we side with him because he is opening up to us. So actually, we side with the villain, which is a problem, of course. But, you know, literature is not always ethical, and we're not always ethical readers. And this is also kind of the fascination that that we find in literature. So literature makes us take on perspectives or roles that we couldn't possibly take on in real life. And coming to the humanities and the hard sciences, I guess you're probably hinting at the question, why the humanities, or what can the humanities actually offer? And this is a question, of course, that concerns us very deeply. And I think the humanities have to be much more optimistic regarding the things that they can offer and the things that students bring to the table. And they also have to strengthen what they can actually, or how students are trained for what kind of jobs. Now, in the humanities, you're not trained for a specific job unless, of course, and many students do this in Stuttgart, you study to become a teacher. But if you're studying for a Master of Arts, you know, why should you study the humanities? But the humanities is actually about who we are, about how we think, about how people can be manipulated, about the history and development of our culture, about how ideas come into being, what drives a villain. Put yourselves into a villain's, in Iago's shoes. And it is also about some of the greatest challenges that we face today, about aspects of gender, race, class, performance, identity, senses of self. So the humanities explore actually what makes us human and how we think. And I'm particularly interested in this aspect of the mind, that literature can actually show us how our mind works, what we attend to, how we can be manipulated, how our thoughts can be manipulated. And this is something, this training is extremely important considering the challenges that we are facing today. So we have a lot to offer to our students, a lot of skills that are often overlooked. And I think we have to maybe be more forceful, or let's say more confident in stressing these skills, not to compete with the hard sciences, but just to tell our future students that, you know, the humanities is an extremely important training and very valuable training that opens up a huge area, a huge arena for our future jobs.
You have spent some time abroad, especially in Britain, but also in the United States. And these were universities, University of Warwick in Britain, Cornell University, Stanford University as well. What approach have you brought back to Germany after your stays there? Was there anything that perhaps you have already implemented and are implementing day by day in your work where you say, yes, it wouldn't be the same, I wouldn't be the same person here, the same professor, the same mediator, if I hadn't made that experience back then?
Mm-hmm. It has changed quite a lot over the years. But when I went abroad, I was very impressed by the that you, whether it's so-called, back then so-called, open door kind of approach at these universities. So professors were much more approachable or seemed much more approachable to students. That is one thing. And then especially when I went to Stanford and there was a humanities center, I really got deeply involved in interdisciplinary thinking. And this is something I think I brought back as well, in this idea that, you know, the greatest ideas that you can have, that you can generate, actually always happen if you talk to people who are from outside your field, who ask the really difficult questions that you have to answer, and who bring in new perspectives that you haven't thought about.
So you have a middle name. We mentioned it before. Here we go again. How do you implement this here?
Well, for instance, by engaging in the research focus IRIS, by reaching out in Stuttgart to colleagues from the computational sciences, from digital humanities, of course, to discuss ideas about new projects, also to reach out to colleagues from cognitive psychology, because I'm very interested in literature and the mind, so-called cognitive literary studies. And I'm trying also to implement these ideas in teaching, so to open up the student's mind to a broader field than just kind of literature, but to tell them that if you study literature, you actually have to have this interdisciplinary lens. Because studying literature also means to consider the historical and cultural background, but also consider kind of cognitive approaches, how we process information, how we process words, what happens with our emotions when we read, how they can be manipulated, etc. So I'm also trying to implement this in my teaching.
I would like to suggest, let's even be a little more daring. As we are, you know, working and improving all the time. At Columbia University in New York, it is mandatory for first-year students from all fields of studies to visit a lecture on literature. I have always been very impressed by this idea. What do you think about this approach? And do you think there is that the University of Stuttgart should move a little bit in that direction as well?
I think it's a fantastic approach. And that actually exists at many universities. Stanford has that as well, the Introduction to the Humanities program for first years. And they're introduced to the key works, of course, in literature, but also in philosophy, for instance. And all students have to take this. I think it's a wonderful approach because you have to confront them also with the difficult questions about identity, about the self, about the history of our cultures, our values. I think that's extremely important. I would love to implement something like this in Stuttgart. We've seen how difficult it is to implement something across all areas with a module or with a teaching idea that was raised in IRIS, namely kind of a reflection module or a reflection element that should be integrated also across the university to make students in all subjects reflect on intelligent systems, whatever that means in their various subjects. But it's very difficult to implement this because the study program is so tight. And students today also often want to get the general requirements out of the way. And they're often afraid that their studies will take longer if they, you know, look beyond into other subjects, other disciplines. So this is a major problem. But I love the idea of implementing something like this as a kind of mandatory course. That would be fantastic. I'm all for it.
So it's moving, definitely. And as it should be, I think. Would you say that switching to the bachelor's and master's system in around 2006 and years that follows. That has been nearly 20 years ago. So it's about time for a rethinking. We talked about rethinking. It's maybe time for reform and double checking what worked, what didn't work, and where we have to be courageous to make it work even better behind this idea. in your field or from what you have seen, where would you start next? We have to start with change in this direction.
Changing the BA and MA program.
Adding, subtracting,
Definitely adding. Definitely adding. We have to add more courses actually in the specific fields. So for instance, if I take our Master of Education program, of course, a lot of courses also focus on pedagogy because these are future teachers, but less and less courses focus on the actual thing, on literature. So it's really hard to convey kind of or to make them get a deep insight into English literatures because there's actually few courses that they have to take. I would also make it mandatory to spend at least a semester, but rather a year abroad. Many students do that. Many students don't because they're afraid that they will lose time. It's now more complicated, of course, due to Brexit, but it is vital that students do that. And I would definitely also make them take a course in a different field. So definitely also heighten this interdisciplinary aspect, which is extremely important for them to gain a broader picture and to change perspective and also to be confronted with the difficult questions and then return to their subject, their core subjects, with a completely different view.
You have talked about the concept of deep attention and hyper attention in your research. And I wonder if, again, this can help us, this understanding of deep attention and hyper attention, in bringing things forward in what you just mentioned and talked about. Can that be applied? I'm not saying modified, but applied to the situation. But perhaps first, what do you understand by these two terms?
Well, it's these two terms were not coined by me, unfortunately, but they were coined by Anne Catherine Hales, and she refers to deep attention as something that we experience, for instance, or enact rather when we read a novel, a Dickens novel, for instance, because we really immerse in the narrative. And hyperattention is something that we need when we read, for instance, text online, Twitter, when we have to change between change to various sites, click hyperlinks, this is hyperattention. Both are needed. Again, there's a shift in skills. So we don't only need to teach deep attention, we also need to teach hyperattention. So I think it's a combination that is the solution here. So both are needed. But I think this aspect of deep attention becomes more and more significant also with regard to schools. If you see what is being read at schools, how people read, it's wrong to say that the new generation doesn't read anymore because they do actually engage in long novels. Think about the Harry Potter craze, anything like that, or Game of Thrones. People started to reading these long novels again. But it is true that the younger generation is rather geared towards hyper-attention. I think one of our tasks is to bring back kind of a balance and also make them reflect about what it means to be attentive. So again, this aspect of reflection. And this is one of our tasks, of course, especially in literature or literary studies. It's not only to convey knowledge about literature, but it's also about how do we read? Why do we read this way? To make them reflect about what texts do with us and what we do with texts, basically.
You're also president of the German Shakespeare Society. And you mentioned schools just a moment ago. I wonder if that is on your agenda in the society, or actually currently what is going on and what will be next upcoming, refreshing, always refreshing, updating so much of Shakespeare, never out of time, never out of touch. But of course, at the same time, we also need to be willing and ready and have the tools and the means and the ideas to work with Shakespeare's texts. On what levels will you engage in the society?
I mean, one of the key aims of the society is fostering the knowledge and the works of Shakespeare in Germany, basically, or the German-speaking countries. And of course, schools are on my agenda, and they have been on the agenda of the German Shakespeare Society for quite a while. Because Shakespeare is covered at schools, but you know, due to our federal system, not always to the same extent. So I know of cases where they have to cover Shakespeare, and they covered this topic by reading articles published in The Guardian on plays and performances that these students never saw and have never read, which is atrocious, actually. So bringing back Shakespeare to the classroom, taking away some of the fears that students have, actually, when they encounter Shakespeare or hear about Shakespeare, because these are old texts, you know, and the language is difficult, so how can I understand it? So that is on my agenda, actually, working with school teachers, working with schools, also with policymakers, to ensure that Shakespeare will stay on the curriculum and will also be covered, because I think that's very important, because these plays are very problematic, but they have a lot to say about the state of our culture, about our world today. What else is on my agenda? Well, just like all literary societies, the Shakespeare Society, of course, needs to attract, the younger generation also. I mean, many students would ask themselves, why should I join a literary society? And they should join because not only because they get access to conferences and they get the Shakespeare Jahrbuch, which is a wonderful publication, but they can also, get support from scholars, from other members in the Shakespeare Society. They can visit Weimar, the Shakespeare Library, and gain new insights into a topic that they might not have encountered, might not have engaged in before. So these are two things on my agenda. But a lot, you know, what the Shakespeare Society is doing is, or has been, on a very high level, and I'm just trying to continue this work as well, which is a huge challenge already.
No doubt about that. While we have you in Stuttgart, however, you can do a lot, and I think you do, in the city of Stuttgart as well. Stuttgart has exceptional theaters, very mm-hmm. experimental, very open, yes. very ready, many art forms dedicated to Shakespeare as well, mm-hmm. I guess. At this moment, as we are talking, how do you see yourself, your role as a mediator of Shakespeare, of literature that you teach here in the city of Stuttgart, and perhaps even at the university?
Yeah, the Schauspiel Stuttgart is wonderful. They have two fantastic productions, The Tempest and Twelfth Night. And we are actually collaborating with them already. So we had a study day on Twelfth Night. And people from the Schauspiel Stuttgart were involved, Gwendolyn Melchinger, for instance, and Burkhard Kuminski are wonderful collaborators at the Schauspiel. So one task or endeavor will be to continue this collaboration and also make this fruitful for the students. I mean, students are regularly invited by the Schauspiel to come and at reduced prices, of course, and come to the dress rehearsal actually for free, which is a wonderful offer. So I would like to continue this. And with regard to the city and the Shakespeare Society, what I haven't done that, but what I like to do is also to organize some kind of events, maybe some discussions with actors, with dramaturgs, with the general public, where people from the university are represented, and which just opens Shakespeare to a greater public. So these kinds of events. But this is something that I still need to work on, but this is on my agenda.
And again, we cannot help it. Shakespeare all over. I think one of the reasons for the immense popularity of the playwright, the writer as such, is also that in his works, people are not told what to think or to feel, but his works show how to do so. There is a lot of showing going on, and that requires a very active recipient, mm-hmm. an audience yes. that goes with it. That, as we mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, always you put yourself, in the context of what is going on stage mm-hmm. and translate it into your times. Mm-hmm. That brings me to the question about beyond the university to society. Where do you think society would have to open up even more to the challenges that we see around us currently?
That society should open up even more. Well, I think it is our task to approach the general public and show them that we are actually very open to their questions. So I think, you know, the task of opening up is actually on us. So society should, of course, be open-minded and maybe also be ready to or be more daring when it comes to also attending events at the university, because that's not always the case. And maybe, you know, and I know that from students, maybe it seems a little bit daunting if something is happening at the university. You think, okay, this is too complicated and I won't understand anything, so I won't attend it. So maybe be more open-minded, be more daring to engage in these kind of conversations and events.
And final question for you, what is up next? What article are you working on right now? Would you like to share a book that is upcoming, a course that you have envisioned, haven't taught yet, but will very soon? Please let us know.
Oh, all of it, certainly. So a course that I actually, that I'm planning to teach in the summer semester, it's a course on toxic Shakespeare, where I would like to discuss plays that are the most problematic plays because they are about anti-Semitism, about racism and misogyny. So The Merchant of Venice, Othello, and Taming of the Shrew, and discuss them with students because these plays take you on a journey. They might start with anti-Semitic sentiments, but in the course of the play, you know, the tables are turned quite radically. And this is a process that I would really like to discuss with students because these are plays that are actually sometimes not performed anymore, and that's a huge discussion in the US. They're actually banned from theaters or banned from the curriculum. So this is a discussion that we need to engage in. So this is a course. An article that I would like to write is actually about Othello and the art of attention, because I think Shakespeare's theater is very much also about attention, because early modern London was a place where a lot was happening, and the theater was part of the greater entertainment culture, and the Puritans attacked theaters because they would distract people, so take their attention away from prayer, from work, etc. And the theaters, I think, took up this idea and actually displayed strategies of attention to the audience. So if you think of Iago, I am not what I am, we constantly have to show a kind of divided attention to be able to shift between the two personae. And Othello, of course, fails tragically because he has this fixation, this kind of fixed attention on the handkerchief, on the betrayal. And this is something, of course, that the theater would caution people against in a way. So that might be the article. And the book that I would like to write is also about attention and the short story. So it's about how the short story actually reflects on aspects of attention and how the short story can be seen as a genre that responded to attention anxieties. Anxieties that were very very prevalent towards the end of the 19th century. So you see, I'm very invested in this idea of attention, deep attention, hyper attention, divided attention, what have you. And this is something that I'm actually very, very focused on currently in my research.
Well, thank you very much for that outlook already. At the end of our conversation, we have a piece called Moment 7. We have collected 7 questions that we would like you to answer in a very, very short fashion. And we call them moment 1, 2, 3, 4. Here we go. Moment 1, Spätzle or Maultaschen?
Maultaschen.
Moment 2, one thing that you would like to change about the world is?
I think based on the current situation, bring in a lot more kindness and collaboration.
Moment three. Do you have a recommendation for a book or some music or a movie that you would like to share?
Ellie Smith's Seasonal Quartet, definitely worth reading.
Moment four. For yourself, the best advice that you have ever received was?
Don't worry too much and be more daring.
Moment five. Your favorite place in the city of Stuttgart is?
The city of Stuttgart. It's the Opera House.
Moment six. Please finish also this sentence. If I could start all over again, I would do the following differently.
Probably not worry so much about the future.
And finally, moment seven. Please complete the sentence. Thanks to my studies, I know that
there's a way to get paid for what you love.
Thank you for our conversation. Thank you for your time. Thank you for having shared some of your visions and also your experiences, of course, that have brought you here to Stuttgart. Wishing you all the very best for the upcoming projects. And once again, it has been a pleasure talking with you today.
Thank you so much.
And to our audience, on behalf of the podcast team, please stay tuned for our upcoming conversations that are always based on what is made in science.